Welcome to Treasure Valley Podcast. I'm your host, Chuck Norton. With us today, we have Freeman DeJong. DeJong just fucked it up, and we were just talking about it. Freeman DeJong.
DeJong.
And as well as Jesse Blake Rundle. We're inside of Mixed Metaphor Recordings, Mixed Metaphor Studios, and the podcast is brought to you by Lower Gentry Studios. That was quite the introduction. I had everything laid out, outlined in my head, and then once I stumbled over the first introduction, it just all fell apart. Thanks for playing the set. Mm-hmm. With us, Jake. Can you tell us about the album that you just released?
Yeah. I just put out a new vinyl LP, a 10-track record called titled Dreadful Feelings. It's a group of songs that I wrote probably 2 years ago and then recorded about a year ago, and then the record just came out a month ago.
And the two selections that you played, the first two selections played were off of that album.
Actually, the first and the third song that I played are off that album.
Okay.
Yeah, the second tune that I played is a tune that hasn't been recorded yet.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but that tune, How to Get High, and that song, I Don't Know, I Can't See Her, probably the two gentlest songs off of the album, which I felt would work well in this setting.
Yeah, and the set that you played previously, which was in our old location, our previous location, you played two songs that are also on that album, because you'd released those as an extended single.
Yeah, well, one of them at that time, I think they were out as singles, and then we opted to put those on the album because they just seemed to... That particular song, Sad Eyed Mariposa, was like kind of the first song that I wrote with my... You know, when my brain was sort of deciding how I wanted to create those songs, you know, like being that, like, you know, like using the synthesizers and kind of trying to like blend folk music with bigger psychedelic or just atmospheric soundscapes and stuff like that. So then after, because I ended up, I think I recorded like 14 songs, and a couple of them just didn't fit in the sequencing. And so those two ended up just fitting. And so since I put them out like kind of like right at the end of the pandemic or maybe during or something, I felt like they were cool songs and they lived well on that album with the other songs. So
right on.
It so felt natural to put them on there.
So as an artist, you have a percentage that you keep and a percentage that you don't keep, it sounds like.
Yeah, I feel
or like, you save them in your back pocket for later.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, like, I feel like not every song you write is a good song, you know, or not every song you write needs to be out in the world, because, you know, some songs you write are like really personal or whatever, and sometimes they just don't work out, or maybe it's just not their time, or they need to like sit for a while and come back at a later time or something like that.
Or if you're like me, it's like, this is really bad and I don't know what's wrong with it.
But you know, I think sometimes too, like so much of making music for me is like who you're playing with. Like it's such a communal thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes if you record a song and it's not the way you imagined it, or it's just not feeling right, maybe you just need to play it with different people or one other person, or go record it on a different day, or, you know, there's so much like, you know, vibe and energy that goes into it. And for me, if I don't hear it and I'm not like, oh, that's great, like I don't really like need to put it out, because, you know, you don't want to put stuff out that you're not confident about, or that you don't feel like is a representation of your work ethic or your creative character or anything like that, you know.
Right on. Yeah. Right on. So can you expand upon that a little bit, as far as you taking lead maybe on the songwriting process, and then when do you let go? Because it's your name, on the track. You know,
I mean,
don't have like a band.
Yeah, there's like on that album in particular, a lot of my friends and a lot of different people played on different songs, and but yeah, you know, I write everything like pretty much before I record stuff, I'll make like series of demos. That's kind of how I work, and I'll usually kind of have, you know, and as in the last few years, as I think I've become hopefully a better songwriter, my demo process has improved, you know, where I kind of will know kind of how to communicate certain ideas that I know like I'm set on, but I'm not like a control, like I'm not like an OCD person. Like I don't like, I mean, I kind of am, but not with recording. Like I believe in really just like letting things happen as they need to, you know? Cause like, I think that like me, like I only maybe come with like a few good ideas to a song. Like maybe I can write some lyrics and a melody and a chord progression and maybe like a cool guitar pedal steel part or something like that. But I don't like try to like put too much of myself in the music, because I know that like I think really great music comes from like the joint effort of making music with other humans, you know, like I don't really like trying to do it all myself because I think it sounds like one dimensional and it's just not fun either, you know, like it's so much more exciting when you're with people and you show something that you created to someone else, you know, like we recorded something here the other week with Jesse and like we... Like I listened to the song on the drive over and we just like wrote it. We wrote the parts, even though I was playing the instrument, we wrote the parts together, you know? And to me, that's like, that's where like the music comes from, you know? It's not like, for me, music isn't like a, isn't something that like I own that comes to me, you know? In some ways it's like mathematics. You have to learn the form and the notes and maybe harmony and scale and some knowledge about music, how it works. And then from there, you know, it's just, it's kind of about just kind of letting it take form, you know? So I don't really try to steer it too hard. You know, I just, beyond like writing the words and, you know, trying to say something meaningful and coming up with sounds that I think are pleasant, you know, I don't know. Like I just kind of try to let it happen, you know?
How does that work with your lyrics though? I mean, that's, where does that fit into the process? Do you have lyrics that you write? Do you put that to music? Do you shoehorn it in there?
It depends. Like, cause I don't, for me, like songs come from a lot of different places. Like I'm not really like a, I don't really think of myself as like a singer songwriter who like writes lyrics first.
Okay.
And then like sits there with a guitar or piano or something and writes chords. Like sometimes I do that, like that a couple of those songs I played today, maybe were kind of closer to that. But for me, like songs usually come in fragments from different places, like because I'm a multi-instrumentalist and play guitar and pedal steel and, you know, like play with machines and stuff too. Like the idea might
By
start
that you mean
somewhere.
Synthesizers.
Yeah, synthesizers. Like
making AI robots in your basement.
Like the idea might start somewhere. Like, you know, sometimes I'll sit there and write a whole song and the lyrics come first and then it'll be like, oh, like what does this need to become a piece of music or something? But like with the Dreadful Feeling stuff, I guess I wrote a lot of those songs. They came from different places, but I did write the lyrics. Like they were pretty important to me. Like I was writing them kind of from a lyrical standpoint and then kind of just decorating the music around the lyrics. But like now I'm not really doing that because I feel like I started to repeat myself a little bit.
Okay.
Like, so I've been like kind of trying to like, I think it's cool to like set up kind of like challenges for yourself, you know, to like,
oh, totally.
Like be like, okay, I'm not going to write words. Like I'm going to treat myself like I'm like the keyboard player in a band and I'm not the singer, and then I'm going to record this part and then I'm going to put on a different hat or put on my wig or whatever and then like go like be the singer and try and come at the song from that way to try and like come up with different stuff, because I, you know, I just need to like keep it interesting for myself too, to try and come up with new ideas and that sort of thing. So it just really depends for me. It comes from all over the place.
I like the idea of hurdles.
Yeah.
Though, because if you don't, I don't know, I feel that when you're being creative, if you are open to everything, sometimes it leads to something that ends up just being complete garbage.
Yeah.
Almost. You know, working in film and stuff, it's a little bit different because you have those limitations immediately in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess now with music, you can't really get a horn and a string section together to, you know, for your song very easily. You'd probably have to use, but other than that, I'm sure there's, I mean, a lot of other limitations, but like you said that you'll approach something from the realm of a different person, you know, in the band. Is that usually something that you use as far as like, this is the instrument I'm unfamiliar with? Do you kind of go that route ever and just be like, this is not something that I even know how to touch. Let's see what the hell happens.
I mean, that can be cool. You know, I don't have like a ton of equipment, you know, that'd be cool to like have more things at your disposal, I think, to do that. Like, I don't play drums. Like that's something that I just never learned how to do it. I've thought I have a drum set now in my home studio that I had ambitions to learn, but 6 months have gone by and I haven't learned anything yet. But yeah, I, you know, it's just, I can't even say. It's really just, I know like my whole thing, it's pretty like lighthearted for me. Like I know if I just sit down and play, I'm usually going to write something. And that's usually what I try and do, is just like, if I just, you know, like I kind of like what I call like my studio office hours, like pretty much every day between like noon and 5 o'clock, I just try and stay in there and just play, whether I'm like learning like jazz chords or, you know, tunes out of a book, or if I'm like reading the owner's manual to my new Moog, or like, you know, like, or just like got a new cool reverb pedal and like, or watching YouTube videos or something of trying to learn stuff, or watching, listening to music or listening to records or whatever. I try and just like, I know if I just play, usually, you know, things are going to happen. So that's pretty much like with my process, that's just where it starts. And then like lyrics, you know, I'm always kind of hard on myself because I like used to be more dedicated to writing, and I don't know if I've gotten lazier about it or if I just like feel like it's more organic, but like usually like I always carry around a little pad of paper, or like, you know, because I don't always have my phone or whatever to write stuff down, and that can be distracting. But like I think of a lot of lyrics off, like
you're like, what was I gonna look at? I have 8 notifications.
Yeah, like I think of a lot of lyrics like when I'm like in the shower late at night, or like walking my dogs, you know, like they just little, those little lines pop in. I go, oh, like I can't forget that. So like right now I've got like a list of probably like 40 one-liners that could like become a song, you know, or something. And I just try and keep that going, and then kind of, you know, try to sit down and really, but I don't know, like lyrics for me, like I'm not a songwriter who can just like sit down and write songs. Like I have to, it has to mean something to me, like in a personal way, or else I just don't think I can sing it or really like have the attention span to even want to write about it. Yeah. You know, like I know people who are like really clever songwriters and can kind of just like write songs and just kind of like kind of blast them out, you know? And I think that that's like a really incredible skill. And I've tried to do that. And whenever I do, I just think it ends up being insincere and just kind of not good, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. And you also play a lot for other bands as well.
Yeah.
So guitar.
Guitar, pedal steel mostly.
Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of like what is the foundation of my income as an artist is playing pedal steel.
Right on.
Yeah.
And so that probably informs your writing process as well. And I'm imagining you have to put yourself in situations where you're extending your abilities based on somebody else's need.
Totally. And that's been really, I think that's the coolest part about playing with other people, is that like you just learn stuff that you'd never think of on your own, you know, because everybody who plays a guitar or a piano or, you know, harmonica or whatever, bass, you know, everybody does it differently, you know? And like, that's what's so cool about playing with other people, is you just go like, oh, like that's like such a simple thing, but I never would have thought of that, you know? And so it's always like, for me, it just like kind of provides constant inspiration, education, and innovation, you know, to be playing with other people. And it comes back to that thing that I just think that like, you know, during that whole COVID time, like everybody was so alone, and like, you know, making music by myself or by yourself, or doing any creative thing by yourself, I think can be like really important. And I know it's an important part of my day is having some alone time doing it. But it just comes back to like that communal thing for me, you know, like you're supposed to do it with people. And I just really like making music with people. And whether I'm playing guitar, singing, writing lyrics, recording my own music, recording music for other people, playing pedal steel for other people, or playing my own shows, it's kind of all the same thing to me, you know? Yeah. Like it all feels good. And so wherever the opportunity is, I just stick with it, because I just want to stay consistent more than anything, you know?
That's good.
Yeah.
Consistency. That makes sense. Yeah. And then the stuff will come.
Totally.
As it comes.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to talk about, with your album, last time you came on the podcast, you had mentioned that during the pandemic, you were messing around a lot with synths.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really cool. The opening track, title track of your album, Dreadful Feelings, it is very heavy on the synth, but it still has that folk vibe to it.
Yeah.
And Jesse, you can probably help me out with some of these questions too, because Jesse knows so much about synthesizers.
Yeah, totally.
What was your you know, thought in that, and how did you arrive at the... basically the mix, I mean, you know, or just the level of the presence of that versus the traditional folk elements in the song.
Yeah.
It's a cool song.
Everybody
needs to listen to it for sure. And it'll start you right off on the album strong. And by the way, people can listen on
Spotify, Apple Music,
all the places.
Yeah, they can buy the record at curationrecords.com.
Cool. So yeah, can you talk about the synth element into the
folk? Yeah. So that song started out actually as like just like I was learning some new chords from like playing jazz charts, and it was just like a loop I made for practicing, like kind of like playing some different styles of melodies and stuff like that. And And yeah, I hadn't, it was kind of just this thing that I like put on the looper pedal that was just like an exercise, you know, like that, again, that was just that thing where like so much comes to me just from practicing, you know? Mm-hmm.
So that you're writing, kind of like improvising melodies at the top of the chord structure.
Totally.
Type thing.
Okay. And then I started like, yeah, and I was like, oh, that's kind of like, that chord progression is cool. Like that could maybe make me sing different or something, you know? Mm-hmm. I started making some demos of it, and like had recently gotten a sequential prophet and was just like really then trying to like make these atmospheric sounds. And that to me comes from like my love of 70s music, specifically like Pink Floyd's album Wish You Were Here, with songs like Welcome to the Machine and Shine On You Crazy Diamond and stuff. Like Rick Wright was using like a Selena string ensemble and a mini Moog, and I think this like was EMS EMC like old synth they had then.
I don't know what it's called.
Anyways, like I love those sounds, those just big atmospheric sounds, you know, like, and talking about the mix, like that's something I really like in a mix, is like a lot of just like space. Mm-hmm. You know, I really like hearing space, and not just like empty space, but like that kind of like that thing that's like white noise, like the wind blowing. Like when you go outside and you just like hear the wind in the trees, you know, like when you're having a conversation or whatever. Like I like that a lot in a mix. I like just like atmosphere and kind of ambient qualities in mixes. So in that tune particularly, I think the only synth that we used was a Juno, a Roland Juno. And a lot of that was actually organ in that song too. And then just like, I'm really into like phasers on guitars. So there was a lot of like that song too. I doubled a lot of the guitars, like the slide part. I got that from like George Harrison, that he would play slide on a Stratocaster, which I think is really cool. Cause most people use like Gibson guitars to do that or whatever. And like, I wanted to play slide that didn't sound like blues, you know?
Yeah.
And that was another cool thing that I was like, oh, like I'm going to come up with this progression. And there's this guitar player in Nashville who I love named Jack Pearson, who's like played on all sorts of stuff. And his guitar style is somewhere between like Wes Montgomery and Elmore James. And it's just really cool, cause he plays like these jazz lines with a slide. And I was really into that. And then I just kind of wanted the song to just have all these like, kind of just these things that were just panning like old psychedelic, like that you'd hear in a Jimi Hendrix song where it sounds like the guitars or like swirling around you, like the Leslie rotating speaker thing, you know?
That's what I was thinking. I didn't know the name for it. Yeah. I used to build those.
I want to do a lot of that. And like, I also like, I think, you know, maybe like years ago or whatever, like, you know, everybody tells you like when you're recording music that things have to be a certain, not recording music, but like people are so like traditional about everything, you know, like everybody wants to tell you that you have to do stuff a certain way. Mm-hmm. And you don't, you can do shit however you want to do it. You know, like if it sounds good to you, that's what your brain is telling you to create, you know? And so like that song was cool. Cause like, I was like, man, like I don't like just singing into like a microphone without effects. Like I like affected sounds. I think they're interesting. Yeah. I think I've heard enough music of like really just like barren sounds, and that's cool. Like there's an organic element to that. But like, I was like, I want to like pan phase guitars on different pickups, double the slide parts and octaves and put them in different places. I want to sing through a vibrato and put, you know, like I wanted to do all this interesting, you know, the stuff that I thought was interesting, at least to create a different vibe. And then really the thing that made that song pop for me, because I wasn't very excited about it, like we were recording it and I kept just being like, I don't know, like it doesn't really sound like it's doing anything for me. And then I asked my friend Andy Rayborn, who I grew up with in Pocatello, who now lives in Portland, Oregon, and he's like a super brilliant musician and just like horn player. And I sent him the song, was just like, hey man, like could you like maybe try and track some horns on this, like, because I think when I was initially, I remember when I was like coming up with the chord progression, I was really into this guitar player named Reggie Young, who was like a Memphis and Nashville session guy, and he played on all like the 60s Memphis R&B stuff. Okay. With all like the horn stabs and like the soul music, and I love that stuff, like the R&B soul stuff. And I was trying to do a lot of that, like emulating that, and like ta 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 ta, like with the syncopation of just like the way the chords were changed, like those stabs, you know, ta ta, those like attacks.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense.
And so then when I finally like, because I was, and I was thinking, well, I'm trying to play guitar like a horn player. Maybe I should just have somebody play horns on this, you know? And he did that. And when he sent it back to me, I was just like, oh, whoa, this song is cool now. And then after that, that's when I started putting the kind of George Harrison-esque slide guitar parts in it. And that's then when I was like, suddenly the song took off and I wrote the solo and kind of like, really was like, okay, cool. Now I know what this song needs to be.
Yeah.
You know, I always say, like, I think we were talking about this the other day, like Jesse and I were talking about this, like being meticulous about recording. Like, I feel like if I record something, if it's like a song that's done, it's probably like maybe like the 400 or 500th time that I've done it to like try and make it like perfect, you know?
Oh,
and
wow.
I think that that's like what good recording is, you know, or good music production is just like having an open mind and just being willing to try something until you find the exact thing that feels right for you. And sometimes that's the first idea you have.
Yep.
And sometimes it's literally the 500th idea you have, mm-hmm. you know? And that's just where like that, I think being patient and like, you know, allowing space in the universe and things to come to fruition and ripen as they will is like a really, you know, probably good thing to remember as an artist, you know?
What did you, as far as the order on that, obviously you recorded Sad Eyed Mariposa because that was on the solo, or excuse me, that was the released single, as a single.
Yeah.
But did, as you progressed through the album, going through the, you know, similar situations with other songs like you're describing just now, mm-hmm. how did that inform other tunes? Were you able to just at like some point be like, oh, okay, this song's going to be easier because I know that it needs an element from here, an element from here that I've already worked through? Or are you kind of starting from scratch?
I pretty much would start, I wouldn't say start from scratch, but I wrote all those songs like pretty much within like a few months of each other. Like, mm-hmm. I knew that I was trying to write a record or an album, make an album, and so I just was, like, writing a lot of songs. And I kind of, like, give myself seasons with that. Like, I don't try and write songs all the time because I think you need time to, like, recharge and live life and, like, educate yourself and come up with new ideas and, like, you know, like, understand yourself and the world you're living in. And so, like, you know, I don't write all the time. Like, I'm playing music all the time, but I don't try and, like, write songs all the time. I'm always coming up with ideas and stuff like that, but I kind of like try and do that thing where like you're like training for like an ultra marathon, right? And like you're never going to go do the 100 miles. I've never run an ultra marathon, but like you're not going to go run 100 miles every day. You know what I mean? Like you're going to like build up to it. Yeah. And then when you get there, it's just like, okay, now I'm going to do this. And so like I wrote all the songs in a pretty concise amount of time. And then once I started recording them, I just think that where my head was at then, you know, because like we become interested in different things, you know, like I was really interested in like kind of this style of sound. And so, no, I didn't really, nothing really informed anything else too much. I think once the horns were on Dreadful Feelings, the fifth song on side A, Moonlight Blue, that was another one that I was like, that I showed Nick, the guy who helped me produce, co-produced all these with me, Nick Archibald. And I was like, I don't know. I don't think it's very cool. And Nick was like, it could be cool. And I was like, I don't know. I was just kind of self-conscious about it. I didn't think it was a cool song. And then after Andy did the horns on Dreadful Feelings, I asked him to do the horns on Moonlight Blue too. And he did that. And I was like, oh, okay, totally. Hmm. That's what that song needed. Because I think before I was like trying to play like a bunch of like, you know, like kind of soul fill guitar stuff on it, and I just wasn't excited about like guitar music at that time, so I didn't want to like write a bunch of stuff that just had noodly guitars all over it, because I think like we've all heard that a million times, and to me at least it just wasn't interesting at that point, you know.
And if you're not doing something that you're engaged in, then it makes, sometimes it'll come through in whatever art you're doing, I feel like.
Yeah, you know, like you just feel it, you know.
Yeah, it's just going through the motions versus like this is exciting.
Totally.
Super cool. Super cool. So, where are we at? What do you, everybody can order it. Where can they order the actual album, though?
The album, the vinyl LP, they can, it is available through curationrecords.com.
Okay.
Yeah. And it'll be in stores, I think, in September now.
Cool. Are you doing online, digital?
That's
orders?
All that. So then, yeah, then it's on Spotify and Apple, Bandcamp. You can buy it at Curation Records Bandcamp.
Okay, cool. Bandcamp, yeah, that's a good spot. Totally. That people can pick it up. And I think they do Bandcamp once a month on Fridays.
Yeah, where they...
Is it where they give all the money to the artists or majority of it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so if anybody... Take a look at that if you're on Bandcamp. Order it and then...
But also, if you buy the record from Curation, you get a free digital download. You know, you get a digital download with the record too, which is cool.
Well, that's cool. You got vinyl as well. Vinyl's neat. The thing is I don't listen to it all that much because it's hard for me to, but it's nice to just have it there and add to the collection because you can like hold it and it's
that cool. Was something with this album that was really the end goal for me was to make a vinyl. Mm-hmm. That's why that was like the beginning of the process. That's what I wanted to do because I hadn't done that. And like, you know, with streaming culture or streaming, whatever you call it, like, you know, people are so like, the way we listen to music now, like you can just listen to playlists or singles all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's like super convenient and it's really cool. And I personally listen to playlists like all the time. And I love listening to people's playlists because I think it's a cool way to like know somebody, you know, is like what they're into over a variety of artists or whatever.
Find new stuff.
But there's also it feels like there's like a, what's the word for it? Like a, it's like temporary, you know, like if you put something on the internet, it'll be cool for like a day or two maybe. And then it just like fades, you know? And like, that's like something that like you, I think like we have to like learn to like have, at least I've had to learn to like not pay attention to, because it's not the gauge of like the value of what you're creating, you know? Like if your stuff is constantly blowing up on Spotify, like, yeah, that's cool or whatever. But what I'm getting at is that like actually making physical art is like, to me, feels really, you know, purposeful and just feels like that, like that's going to be there after I'm dead. I mean, you know, like those records, like maybe somebody will buy that record at a Goodwill in 80 years,
right?
You know, they'll find it in a box and they'll dig it or something, you know, like versus like, I don't know, like was Spotify going to be around in 80 years? You know, like what's the, like, there's something to just like the physical. Cause I do that. Like, you know, I love going to record stores and finding just random old stuff. And then you put it on, you're like, whoa, like this is really cool, man. Too bad these guys died broke, you know?
Like, take one of those vinyl albums and throw it in one of the old buildings in one of their bomb shelters, the post-apocalypse, you'll have something that makes it through.
It just feels like a more like intimate connection with people too, you know? Like, like getting a record from somebody or giving somebody a record or whatever, like, you know, it's just cool. Like, you know that it's like going to be in their space. Like, it's actually like they can hold it and touch it and, you know, it just feels more like, I don't know. It's like, to me, it's like the difference between like writing someone an email and writing someone a letter. Like if you're really trying to like seek a connection, you're going to write someone a letter, you know, not write them an email or send them a DM or something like that, you know?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. It's all business. And the streaming thing, I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of valueless and very, fleeting, which is too bad. But, you know, the nice thing about here in the Treasure Valley is the music scene is, it feels like it's so vibrant and thriving and alive that at least there's the live aspect that you can always like catch and hopefully that leads to sales of your vinyls, because
I mean I think
getting your art to pay the bills would be pretty sweet.
That's the thing about the internet, man. Like, and I certainly don't know anything about anything. I'm not going to talk about the internet. What I'm going to say is like, I know like what sustains me is playing music with real people for real people, and being able to like sell records or merch or whatever at those shows. And like, and to me, that's also the most satisfying, you know, is to be like playing with people for real people, because that's when like records are great, because you can make things perfect and exactly how you hear them in your head at that time. But live music is so special because like, we're humans. You're going to have bad nights where you don't sing well or you don't play well, you know? And then you're going to have those great nights, like when you hear people be like, oh man, I saw this band and like so-and-so, and like they were just like crushing that night, you know? Like, that's really cool when that happens. Yeah. Maybe the next night that band has an awful night or whatever, because somebody didn't eat dinner before the show, or who knows what. But that's what's so satisfying about playing like live music, you know? And you're right. It is very, very vibrant here. Like, everybody I know who's a musician in Boise or in this whole area is so busy all the time.
Yeah.
And that's really cool, you know, versus like and busy doing cool stuff, doing interesting stuff, you know? So yeah, it's a good place to, I feel like the here and now is a good place to be.
Cool. Do you have any big shows coming up this summer? Actually, this is probably going to post in about a month.
So
September. Can you think of any?
I don't know. I don't have anything.
But people can follow you on Instagram.
Yeah, the Instagram thing. I put all the shows on there. I don't have anything. Okay. I don't think. I'm going to try and do like a, maybe not like a record release show, because the record's already been out. But when it comes out like in stores, for instance, I think I'd like to do a show here in town playing it in its entirety, like with the people who played on it. Because I've been playing shows, you know, kind of with a couple of the guys who played on it, like Wade and Ryder and Casey. But I'd like to kind of do like the whole thing and try and get like maybe if Andy's in town or something, like try and play the whole thing like with the full arrangement. Because that's always, I think, what's hard too is like, you know, like I think you can do whatever you want in your records and make them sound huge and just go crazy. Cause that's the point. It's like the permanence, right? Like it's going to be around after you're dead, you know? So make it big, you know? But also there's always that like, oh man, like we don't have a, like, I don't have a horn section or a string section. Like how am I going to make that sound live? Yeah. You don't always get to do that live. Like what's on your record, you know, like you kind of have to, like a lot of the time a live song takes on a different character than the recorded version or something.
Yeah. Filling in the gaps. Yeah.
But it would be really, it also is really cool when like you can go see a band that maybe has the resources or whatever to make that happen, you know, where you can be like, oh wow, that's like exactly how that sounds on the record. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally. Cool. Well, hey, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, man.
And go to the YouTube link that's going to be in the description if you want to see the live set that was just played. We posted that the week prior to this. So thanks for playing with us.
Hey, thanks, Chad.
And we'll see you all next week.